coming to you live from the inevitable heat death of the universe. I'm Tom Rich, and with me as always is a comfy sweater. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 68, The Amiable Admiral's Admirable Animal Amble.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast, the show where everything's made up and the points don't matter. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
You can't just borrow from other shows.
I didn't borrow anything.
You did. That's from another show.
Everything is made up.
But you took that from a different place.
No, I made it up. No. What did I just say, Tom?
No, that's airtight, actually.
I know.
You can't get any air through it.
None at all.
I'm Tom Rich. And my cat is screaming his head off in the background.
One day I will murder your cat on the air.
It's probably fine.
Yeah. He almost knocked that bookshelf over. That was awesome.
It's probably okay.
Why do you have an animal in your house?
I took him off the street one day.
I think he was probably, well, he wasn't better off on the street.
And now he lives in my home. That's the entire story. One day I just scoop and scored a wild animal out of the woods, more or less.
Uh-huh.
And now it lives in my house.
He's about to go for your laptop, just so you know. Like, he's got that look in his eye.
Okay, anyway, so we're on the show. This is the internet that you're on listening to us talk to you about topics, and we're happy to have you. Welcome, readers. Good to have you here. I'm Tom. He's Johannes. I'm the pretty one. He is the one who knows how to make the show, and we got a great show for you tonight. It's incredible. Barack Obama is here as our special guest, so that's going to be interesting, and... yeah. So what do we got before that, though, before he comes out of the green room on our board game podcast about board games?
I like the idea of a green room for a podcast. Like, that seems unnecessary.
Well, yeah, you need a green room so you can edit out all the stuff in the behind the person, right?
Yeah, that's what that is.
Isn't that what that is?
No.
Oh, what's a green room then?
That's the room that you just sit around in that has snacks and like a bathroom and what. Well, it's basically the dressing room for a guest.
Well, sure, you would need a green room for a podcast. Like, where else are they going to sit around in and have snacks?
They don't get snacks. We're a podcast. But we don't have money for that kind of thing.
We don't have a green room?
Nope.
Then where does Chip Beauvais hang out before he comes on the show? You're telling me... Wait.
That's just Chip's room.
You're telling me that when Chip comes on the show, we don't have a room that he gets to sit in for a while, and there's like bowls of M&Ms and stuff?
We do.
Listen, I have a 13-page writer contract for that guy, explicitly laying out what he wants in the green room, and you're telling me we don't have a green room?
Chip has a room. But it's Chip's room. That's part of the writer.
I spent 14 hours sorting M&Ms into different bowls last time he was on the show.
Yeah,
for
that was
that
right.
Green room.
Yeah, you should have done that. That wasn't for the green room. That was for Chip's room.
Where is Chip's room if we don't have a green room?
It's Chip's room.
Just Chip's room.
No one else gets to use it.
It's just his. It's not the green room. But then what about when other people come on the show? They don't have
They're just SOL. Unless they bring their own.
So we have the recording studio where we record the podcast. We have Chip's room, where Chip gets to hang out.
Uh-huh.
And that's it? Are there any other rooms I don't know about?
I don't think so.
Do you have a special room?
No.
Do you have a special room that you didn't tell me about?
No.
You've got that look on your face. You've got that look on your face like you just took a cookie off of the cookie sheet after I made cookies, and you weren't supposed to take one because you're supposed to wait until they cool, and then you burn your mouth, and then you can't taste your dinner, and you spend the whole dinner whining about it, and then I beat you with a rolled-up newspaper. Do you have your own room that you didn't tell me about?
No.
Wayne?
I don't have one that I didn't tell you about.
Did you tell me about the room and then I forgot about it?
Maybe.
Dep?
Also, who waits for cookies to cool? What kind of barbarian eats fresh baked cookies when they're no longer fresh baked?
You don't eat them, well, once they're cold. You don't put them on ice and chill them, but you do wait until they cool sufficiently that you're not going to burn the roof of your mouth and not be able to taste your potato salad at dinner.
Maybe I did it because I don't like the taste of your potato salad.
After everything I have done for you, that you would say such a thing is extremely hurtful.
That's what I was going for.
Oh, okay. Right.
So we wanted to dive a little bit more into analysis paralysis. We've brought it up on many occasions when we had an early episode where we talked about analysis paralysis and many other different problems you might run into with your players in your gaming group. But due to... Tom is barely containing himself over there. Due to some things that I heard recently, I wanted to talk about it a little more. So... should I set those things up?
Yeah, you should probably set those up because I can't remember what they are.
I listened to the Judge John Hodgman podcast, which if you enjoy Judge John Hodgman, if you enjoy the writings of John Hodgman or The Daily Show.
Incidentally, it's not a podcast where you get to pass judgment on John.
No, in fact, it's one where you volunteer to allow him to pass judgment on you as an internet judge in a court of pretend internet law.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a couple on that was arguing about board games. The name of the episode. It was called The Waiting Game. Episode, now it's playing instead of telling me things about it. Anyway, The Waiting Game. Look for it. The Judge John Hodgman podcast episode named The Waiting Game. Where the wife brought a case against the husband because he takes unbearably long turns on games. To the point that other people playing games with him will just leave the room. For, I think he said his longest term in, they talked about a couple games, Dominion and Ascension were the two main ones they talked about. So either in one of those two games, I want to say it was in Dominion, his longest turn on record was something like 17 minutes.
No.
I would straight murder a person.
I wouldn't, yeah, no. That, double digits, there's no game where a double digit turn length is okay.
Yeah, no. I agree. I agree with that. So he was making the argument that to impose a time limit on his turns would be changing the game because that's not explicitly written in the rules. And so that's not okay. And he was saying that he's playing the game as it's meant to be played. And if other people want to basically be, handicap him so that they have a better chance of winning or whatever, that's not the same game and it's not worth doing. And he was fairly obnoxious. If I had been there in person,
sure,
I may have slapped him.
Okay, guy on the Judge John Hodgman podcast, I'm gonna take a position, the kind of asinine, nuanced position that usually makes Johannes punch me really hard in the throat.
I'm fine with them because I love punching Tom in the throat.
So if I just start wheezing at some point and sort of begging for somebody to call me an ambulance, that's what happened. He just reached across the table and really hard punched me in the throat. You got a point, guy. In that, you're right, the game rules do not explicitly place a time limit on your turns, and by artificially saying, look, just frickin' take your turn already, they are making you play a slightly different game than the rules as written in the manual for Dominion or whatever game you're talking about. But here's the thing, guy, that you're forgetting about. The fact that we're choosing to, we, the other people at the table, are playing that game means you're playing a different game from us.
Mm-hmm.
You're choosing to play a different game that nobody else at the table wants to play. And if that's the case, that's fine. You can all just be like, we don't want to play the same game and then not play board games together. You got to take your turn. You've got to take it. You're right. It is a different game, but it's the game the people involved want to play.
Yeah.
And the only time the kind of asinine rules lawyerry you're going for here, the only time where the strict rules as written, you know, frickin' philosophical interpretation of the text nonsense is appropriate, is if there's a lot of money on the line.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, no, take your freaking turn. Just take it, take your turn, and be done with it, and enjoy the time you spend with friends and loved ones. For God's sake.
There's a point to be made, which I guess is the point you kind of just made. If it were like tournament play, and you wanted to make the argument that it is by the rules, no changes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If your point is to prove that you are the best of all of the people who are the best of the best at playing this game as written, no changes made, no caveats, mm-hmm. no handicaps. And the game you're playing allows for a 30-minute long turn, fine. If you need a 30-minute long turn, go for it. But the point of a game for most people is to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are doing that and thereby depriving other people of having fun, you are failing at playing right. any game.
And the argument about tournament play loses a lot of steam because tournament play
is usually timed
for literally any game is going to impose a time limit because the tournament has only rented the hall it's being held in for so long.
Right.
You know, and more abstractly, we all only have so many years on this earth that we all cohabit together, so frickin' finish your turn, Gary. It's fine. Gary doesn't actually take that long of turns anymore. He doesn't. He's kind of gotten the message about analysis paralysis. Just like, finish up, man. Finish up.
I do. I feel like there's a little bit of a difference in this particular situation between analysis paralysis and what's actually going on.
Because
I don't feel like... I didn't get the impression that he was necessarily being like, oh, I have so many options and I can't figure it out. He was just like, I'm going to take, intentionally, all the time I want.
Well, that's... I mean, that's a very different thing, then. If you're saying... It takes me 17 minutes to think through all of my options and decide on which is the optimal one. That's something I have a certain degree of sympathy for because I can see that wanting to fully consider your turn and make the best move. Like that makes sense to me. Even if I want to say, well, that's fine, but you only have 5 minutes to do it. But if you're saying I'm going to take a 17 minute turn, not because it takes me that long to decide what I want to do, but because it plays some sort of psychological game with the other players and throws off their play.
I don't think that's what he was doing. It was definitely the first one, but I guess I don't know. I feel like analysis paralysis is, and maybe this is my ADHD interpretation of it.
Mm-hmm.
That like there are so many choices to make, I'm actually like freezing up trying to make them. Actual like paralysis.
Sure.
It's not just this takes a long time because I'm trying to weigh every option. It's because I can't weigh every option, and I sort of panic freeze and do nothing.
Gotcha.
That may be too far. That probably isn't what other people mean when they say analysis paralysis, but that's how I've always taken it.
It's certainly a part of one manifestation, I think, of analysis paralysis.
Yeah.
I think that umbrella is a little wider than maybe we've used it before. But incidentally, if you use long terms as a deliberate psychological tactic to throw off your opponent, you can go to hell.
Yeah.
Because you're a dick. Like,
you're a bad person. Know.
But yeah, you're right. There is a difference between taking a long time to weigh all your options and being overwhelmed by your options to the point where you can't proceed. The second implies that that's not a game for you at the moment. Like that game is presenting you with more stuff than you want or are able to function with. And maybe it's just not the sort of jam you want to get into.
Right.
The first is... You know, it really depends on the group you're playing with. Like, it's like if you're playing just a game with people, you should probably just cut the crap, pick what seems like the best option after a couple of minutes and go. Because you got to take your turn. Everybody has to work tomorrow. Everybody has to work in the morning. Take your turn, Gary. I'm sorry, I'm picking on you, Gary. Take your turn, Bubba. We have to get going here. But if it's more. Yeah, you got to weigh the group you're with.
So I want to talk a little more about changing rules or house rules or just rules that aren't addressed in the game at all. But just real quick, I got mm-hmm. I don't want to just have our entire podcast here be about another podcast, but just because I think it adds a little more nuance to the discussion. The guy was saying, it's not like I'm just not doing anything on my turns or just sitting there thinking. I'm taking these very long turns, but I'm doing things. And his argument was bad. It was like, it's not like there's nothing to do. You know, they can see what I'm doing, so other players can watch me take my turn and see what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like there's nothing for them to do, which is a almost barely valid point, I guess. But so I guess I'm trying to figure out, other than like in Dominion where occasionally you have cards that set off, you know, you get another turn, and then if you play your hand right, you get another turn from that, and you end up playing actually like three or four turns on mm-hmm. your one turn. I don't know, outside of that, what you could do in most games that could make just a, like, buying, because both games are deck builders, what you could do that would make your turn while you're buying and selling and playing and moving cards take 17 minutes. So I don't know. His argument is bad, I think. And he won.
Yeah.
Not to spoil the podcast for all of you who were going to go listen to it, but...
Lol. I'm trying to think of other games that might do it. Eclipse, I don't really think you could ever get a turn up to 17 minutes reasonably. Not really. Like, that's a pretty long... Like, Risk I could see happening late in the game when you've got a crap ton of armies and you're just pile-driving through Africa.
Yeah.
But you shouldn't be playing basic Risk anyway.
No.
Don't play that game. There's better games out there. Like... You could be justified playing Risk Legacy, maybe, but don't play basic Risk at all. Don't do that. No, not Monopoly.
So another one they brought up where he said he takes very long turns is Scrabble. And that's pretty much just looking and thinking. And that's a game where I guess I could see the argument both ways. But really, like we have mentioned before that we are both proponents of the egg timer mechanic.
Oh,
from
God, that's a mechanic that should be stapled to the front of every rule book everywhere.
Originally, we've experienced it in Code Names, where if at any point you feel like the other team is taking too long, there is a sand timer that you can flip, and it says, I think it's a minute. I think it's a 1 minute sand timer. And when it runs out, their turn is over.
And they just have to take their turn right away, and they have to do whatever at that point.
And it does fall pretty squarely under the... Like, don't play with that guy. You know, the don't be a dick unspoken rule of all games. That, you know, you could conceivably, at the beginning of every turn for the other team, flip that timer and just say, ha ha, you have a minute now, suckers. But you'd be a jerk. Right. And also, if you were to do that, they would very quickly start doing the same thing to you.
Right, right. It's a mechanic that demands restraint for everybody involved.
Yeah,
but it's such a good mechanic to have.
I like it.
Just floating there to just be like, no, you know what? You know what? I'm flipping the timer. Flipping it, and now you have to take your turn. You have to figure it out in a minute and just pick something. And maybe I'll win the game because of that. Maybe I'll win, but does it matter that much? Is it that important? Is it that important to you? Really? Seriously? Now we're not friends anymore. Where did we go wrong? Where did we go wrong? It was here in this game. Of Scrabble. This is what ruined it. This is what ended what used to be such a beautiful thing.
It might also have been the time when I had my face removed and your face put on my face so I looked like you, and then you snuck in and took my face and put it on your face so you looked like me.
Are you just recapping the plot of the movie Face Off, starring John Travolta and Nicolas Cage?
I don't think so.
Because I think that was the plot of the movie Face Off. Starring John Travolta and Nicolas Cage.
Are you sure it wasn't the time that I had my face altered to look like your face and then...
Wait.
You had your face altered to look like my face?
But hold on, though.
There was a motorboat chase.
Wait, which one am I right now? Am I...
You're you.
Me.
And I'm me.
But am I you or me?
You're you.
I'm you.
No,
but...
no. You're you.
I'm you and you're me?
No, I'm me.
Right, you're me.
No, I'm me.
But I'm you.
No, you're you.
I'm you.
No, oh. You're you.
Wait, okay. So wait. Hold on. One of us is Tom.
Uh-huh.
And the other is Johannes.
Correct.
And I'm me,
mm-hmm.
Tom. And you're you, Johannes?
That sounds right.
Okay. But I'm me. Right?
I would say you're you, but...
Oh. So wait, are you you or are you me?
I'm me.
But that's...
And you're you.
But I'm me.
No.
You just said I'm me.
I'm me.
No, I thought I was me.
This is the worst segment we've ever done.
It's an incredible segment. Whatever. Anyway, take your turns in a reasonable amount of time. That kind of stretches to a broader point about board gaming in general. Like, what is the point? Why are we bothering to do all of this? Why do we have all of these boxes of cardboard and plastic in our cupboards? And aside from the real reason, which is that we're man children who never outgrew being 7 years old, it's to have a nice time with people we like to be around, you know, and to just do stuff. And if the way you are taking your turns is causing everybody else to not have fun, to not have a nice time, maybe you're the guy who sucks. Or the gal. Maybe you're the gal who sucks. Either one.
Nobody likes the guy and or gal who sucks.
Yeah, don't be the guy who sucks. Be the guy that everybody wants to have around. It's like, maybe you lose the game. Maybe if you had thought through the turn for 14 hours, you would have won because you would have seen the strategy. But you know what? Nobody stayed for 14 hours. After the first 30 minutes, they were like, you know what? I'm going home. This is too much. I'm going to go home. I'm going to make nachos. I'm going to fall asleep watching Gladiator on Netflix. Gladiator is on Netflix, by the way. You should
note it.
It's great. And I'm going to fall asleep. And I'm going to fall asleep at about the point where Russell Crowe is, he's fighting for the first time in the arena. And I'm going to wake up at the point where his African friend is talking over his grave and is like, but not yet. Not yet. And then the song plays and it's the end and it's great. And that's what's going to be my evening now, because we were playing Carcassonne and you have just taken an inordinately long turn and now I don't want to play with you anymore. You big doofy gorilla.
Gorilla.
Gorilla. Dicks out for Harambe.
You're the worst.
You can edit it.
I know, but I shouldn't have to. It's just more work for me.
Well, just don't let me have that much beer at dinner, then. Put a stop to it instead of encouraging it.
You had two beers.
Yeah, but I weigh 4 pounds.
Right, but by the time the second, like, it just arrived, and I was like, oh, okay, I guess we're doing that now.
It's true. She didn't really ask if I wanted a second one.
She was just like, you're drinking this.
She was like, here, you're drinking this. Here's my number. Didn't happen.
No.
Didn't happen at all. I've gotten digits from a lady at a bar once.
Wow. Like on purpose?
They weren't really digits. It was an email address, and it wasn't really to, have boy-girl fun. It was so I could send that person my short stories that I write. Because we were talking about writing that evening at the pub. And, so that was my story about getting digis at the bar.
It's a good story.
It's a bad story. It's terrible.
I know.
Oh.
I was just trying to be nice.
You never do that, ever.
Yeah, it was a mistake, and I regret it.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to talk, as I mentioned probably 15 minutes ago, a little bit more about just changing the rules of games.
Sure.
I don't know. Like, I can see both sides, kind of. Because the guy was like, oh, well, that now you've changed the game, and then it's a different game. And to some degree, he's right.
Mm-hmm.
So when we first played... When we first played Arkham Horror, we did pretty well at it because we misunderstood a lot of the rules,
mm-hmm.
and in a way that made things easier for us. And I think we enjoyed the game more that way than we ever have since learning how to play it correctly.
Sure.
Because it's just so hard. And that is part of the game that we like too. Just like it fits the theme and you get destroyed by a giant monster from out of time and space. But at the same time, sometimes you win and that's nice. And that doesn't happen so often when you actually play the game as written.
No, it doesn't happen at all.
And I like that we had that experience by accident because I don't feel like I would be inclined to make the changes in the rules
mm-hmm.
to make that happen because I would feel like it was cheating.
Well, and two, I feel like it's a different experience. Oh, we made a mistake and had an easier time versus let's deliberately have an easier time.
Right.
Like those are two... They get you to the same rule state, like the mechanical function of the same, but it's a different emotional experience of the book.
Right.
Game. Board game. We're talking about board games, not books tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Damn, girl. Oh, anyway, yeah, you're right. I agree with that statement that you made.
But then when you go back to the mechanic with the timer
mm-hmm.
From Codenames, I like that, and I would have no problem applying that to most games. And there are other games that just have dumb rules that I don't mind throwing out or changing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even fully understand what my criteria are in my brain for when we can or can't house rule something. And I also have sort of an aversion, I think, to the term house rules.
Mm-hmm.
Be like, oh, well, that's a house rule. I feel like, well, then it's not official. So it doesn't really mean anything. So you're not playing the game right. And like, you're playing it the way you play it. And that's fine for your group, but that's not how you play the game.
Sure.
But then there are things we do that our house rules because it's just our group that does them.
Mm-hmm.
But I would maybe balk a little bit at calling them house rules.
What do we do that rules. You would call house rules?
I'm trying to think if there even is anything. I'm just saying I'm sure there are things,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know.
Just general misunderstandings or ways we roll through the game or whatever.
Yeah, and I wonder if some of it is, having done game design, I feel so snooty saying as a game designer, especially as an unpublished game designer. But we have a podcast where we talk about game design. I guess I can call myself a game designer and tell someone
whatever you want.
Until someone tells me to cut it out. They're like, you're not part of the club.
I call myself a writer, for Christ's sake.
Well, you write things. So I guess, yeah, same logic applies. But at any rate, I feel like, I guess, to change the rules of someone else's game is a little bit of a slap in the face of the designer. But not really. If someone were to do it to our game, especially if I saw it and I was like, oh, that's actually not a bad change, I wouldn't mind. And really, if they were doing it to one of our games and they got more enjoyment out of it, unless they were deliberately being a dick to me about it and, like, you know, messaging us on Twitter or something to be like, hey, your game sucks and we made it better because we're smarter than you, that would be annoying. But it wouldn't be the actual change of the rules that would irk me so much as the attitude.
Right.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the nice things about board games as compared to video games is that it's very easy to take a board game and make it work differently if that differently works better for you and your people. Like, if a timer on a Dominion turn works better for your group, put a timer in. It's fine. Nobody cares. Donald X, don't know how to pronounce his last name, can't remember how it goes, doesn't care wherever he is in whatever high realm he's been consigned to. After being a highly successful board game designer, I assume Valhalla, but you never know.
I have no idea who or what you're talking about.
The guy's name. He designed Dominion.
Okay.
His name is Donald X, and then it starts with a V, but I can't remember the rest of his last name. We should probably put it in the show notes.
Okay, fine.
Donald X Vaccarino? Viancarlo?
I have no idea.
Varcoloso? I don't know. But anyway, the point is he doesn't care if you put a timer on Dominion. Probably, I assume. I've never met him. And the same for other designers. I'm sure if there's a way of playing the game that works better, that's what analog games are good for, is that you can make those little tweaks and whatnot. Did you find it?
No, I just typed a note to look it up.
Oh, okay.
I could look it up.
Yeah, it's good. It's what we like about games. They're good stuff. They're fun. Board games, everyone.
Donald X Vaccarino.
Vaccarino. Not Viancarlo. That's a different person, probably.
Maybe. I don't think I've ever noticed that name on the box. Cool, I guess.
You know, it's good. It's good stuff.
So anyway, even though that guy is a snooty jerk on that episode, and I was shouting at my radio the entire time I was listening to it, I would recommend you go check out that episode, or really any episode of the Judge John Hodgman podcast.
Mm-hmm.
It's relatively entertaining, and if you don't like it, well, you maybe wasted 30 minutes or something, but...
And if the way that you're playing board games is making the people you're playing board games with not as happy to be playing board games with you, play board games differently.
Or retire to the mountains in shame.
You know, I said that to somebody at work the other day, and they looked at me like I was insane.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
I get that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
One time I said loudly in front of my boss and my boss's boss, accidentally because I forgot they were in the room with me, I have shamed my family, I will retire to the mountains, and they looked at me like I was a lunatic, because they were having a different conversation that didn't involve me, we just happened to be in the same room.
You just said it to the air after you screwed up with the copy machine, right?
Yeah, I said it to the copy machine after I screwed up with the copy machine.
Yeah.
And they were like, but, and I'm like, sorry, I'll go.
If you have opinions about how weird it is or isn't to mention retiring to the mountains in shame, you should let us know on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
Or you can let us know on the email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow.
Or if you climb to the top of the tallest mountain and sit in contemplation of the nature of existence for a long enough period of time, indeed a period of time so long that time itself ceases to truly make sense for you, eventually we will manifest before you and slap you silly, because we're not really like that. We're just kind of unpleasant.
We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors.
Yay, yay.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by Beefy Cheddar Buns, America's favorite sweet and savory dessert pastry with all the cheese, beef, and hot, creamy frosting you love.
But does it have umami?
It has all the umami you could want, other guy.
I don't know. I want a lot of umami. I want the umamost.
You won't be disappointed. Beefy Cheddar Buns have the maximum amount of umami allowed by the FDA. 400 foot-pounds of umami driven by a powerful Hemi engine.
But what if I don't want any umami? Can you throw a fellow a bone on that?
For the umami-free bun enthusiast, we now offer the Beefy Cheddar Bun XL with twice the umami of the original Beefy Cheddar Buns you know and love. It's an umami tsunami. There's so much umami, it can't legally be called a food, but is classified instead as a type of low-grade fuel additive for suborbital ballistic weapons platforms.
But that's...
freaking amazing?
No, it's...
You're damn right. Beefy Cheddar Buns, available at grocery stores nationwide, and new Beefy Cheddar Buns XL in the industrial cleaners aisle at your local auto parts store. And also at Kinko's. And now, Mildly Alarming Theater presents Liver Me Timbers. Colonel, thank God you're here. We've kept things under control as best we can, but it's... well, this facility wasn't designed for this kind of thing.
And exactly what kind of thing is that, Dr. Bonehammer?
You weren't briefed on the helicopter right in?
Doctor, I received orders to mobilize, so I mobilized. I had a conference call with the Secretary of Defense, true, but he's a busy man with a lot of paper to push and lapel pins to put on. And in any case, well, you're the doctor. I'm sure you could provide more detail than he did.
Of course, Colonel. Okay, well, more or less, an experiment has gotten out of control and we need you to kill it. You've got to kill it.
What sort of experiment?
Well, the official descriptor is hepatoethanol generation and stimulation series Q.
Ethanol? You mean moonshine? Now, I'd been led to believe that this facility was a scientific establishment dedicated to cutting-edge research to benefit the taxpaying citizens of the United States. You telling me that you boys have set up a still in the back and called in the army to clean up a spill?
Perhaps I should start at the beginning, but please, let me get through it. We don't have a lot of time.
All right, Doctor. Go ahead and tell your story.
Okay. 2 years ago, a hobo was found passed out in a Philadelphia alleyway in a pile of empty wine bottles. They took him to the ER for detox. Everything looked normal until the following morning when the nurses discovered that he was still just as drunk as he'd been the night before.
I've been on the sauce myself a time or two, Doctor. Waking up still drunk doesn't seem so strange.
But he didn't wake up. His blood alcohol level not only hadn't gone down, it had gone up. And it kept creeping up over the next few days. They didn't have any idea what to do with him. That's when we got a hold of him.
You took the hobo out of the hospital.
I've been studying the capacity of the human body as an organic factory, Colonel. A machine that, with the right modifications, can produce almost anything you want. I had a hunch that this hobo somehow was producing his own alcohol, and I was right.
Congratulations. Did I mobilize a division of soldiers to shirt collar a tramp and throw him in the drunk tank?
Not exactly. You see, we isolated the source of the alcohol production to the man's liver. We took samples of his liver so we could figure out how it was doing this, see if we could replicate the process.
To what possible end?
Think about it, Colonel. All the alcohol you could ever want. Endless amounts pumped out by factory floors full of livers. The implications for ethanol fuel alone were worth the attempt.
So what went wrong?
We discovered that the hobo's liver needed to be given a small amount of alcohol before it would start production. Maybe it acts as a sort of blueprint, we're not sure. The first few times we tried it, we killed the liver right away once it started producing. But then, well, we decided to let it go, see what happened.
Famous last words, Doctor. It got out of your control?
The liver is the only organ in the human body that can regenerate itself. And whatever's different about this liver caused it to grow out of control. The last time we were able to get close, it was nearly 30 feet across and spraying out 200 gallons of alcohol per hour. And it's basting in that alcohol, Colonel, getting drunker and drunker by the minute, and more dangerous.
More dangerous?
A liver isn't aggressive normally, but it does work to filter and destroy toxins. A drunk, enormous liver can't tell what it should be filtering and what it shouldn't. And this liver is very big and very drunk, and getting more of both at a nearly exponential rate.
So let me get this straight. You have a huge, angry liver in that building, Picklin and its own special reserve White Lightning and looking to run more or less whatever it comes across through itself and out the other side?
That's the state of play, yes.
Understood, Doctor. Thank you. Captain Bantam, initiate Operation Frying Pan. Yes, that's right. Yes? Yes. No, I don't think so. We'll decide that when I get back. Yes? No. Hazelnut. Thank you, Captain.
What? What's Operation Frying Pan?
Surely, Doctor, you are aware that the Pentagon has a suite of offices where the sharpest minds ever to graduate the service academies just sit around all day imagining crises and writing up plans for how to deal with them. Did you really think that the United States Army, the finest fighting force the world has ever seen, would not have a plan in place to handle a giant, angry, drunken liver? I'm prepared to call that unpatriotic.
But, and I'm sure I'm going to regret asking this, what's the plan?
The same plan that's used for any angry liver, Doctor. Butter and onions. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a giant liver to fry.
Wait, hold on. If you douse that liver in butter and onions, won't it just start spraying hot butter everywhere instead of alcohol?
I don't know, Doctor. You tell me. You made the giant liver.
I mean, it stands to reason that it would. Alcohol in, alcohol out. Butter in, butter out.
Captain, belay Operation Frying Pan. Is alcohol all that you put in that liver, Doctor? You said it was filtering things through itself in its confusion. What else is going in there?
Office equipment, desk chairs and whatnot, two party subs and Jerry's birthday cake, all the foam from a fire extinguisher that Jerry thought might suffocate it, the fire extinguisher that Jerry was using. Jerry?
So why isn't the liver producing wheelie chairs, party subs, and Jerry? You told me it was only producing alcohol. Surely, Doctor, you're not painting a raccoon and calling it a possum now.
What?
What do you mean, what? Surely, Doctor, you aren't painting a raccoon and calling it a possum now.
No, I heard what you said, but where are you supposed to be from?
Don't we have better things to talk about than my childhood, Doctor? Like figuring out how you killed those other livers without them just spraying out more, I don't know, knives or bullets or fire or whatever.
We ran them over with a forklift.
A forklift?
It was what we had handy. Jerry drove it.
So you're saying that if we were to run over this liver with a forklift, it might just kill it?
It might, but it would take a massive forklift. I don't know if science can produce such a forklift. Not on such short notice, in this economy.
Science may not be able to do it, Doctor, but the Army has no such limits. Captain Bantam, cancel Operation Frying Pan and initiate Operation Giant Forklift. Yes, that is correct. Yes? Yes? No? I love you too. Now, Doctor, if you'll excuse me, I have a giant forklift to drive.
You're gonna drive it yourself? I figured, like, a private or something would do that.
One of the privileges of command is getting to drive the giant forklift. Come on, Doctor. We'll get you a front row seat.
And so the Army ran over the enormous, out-of-control liver with a forklift, killing it quite dead. Though they never did solve the mystery of why it didn't just produce an endless amount of Jerry's after filtering him. But they were able to recover most of the alcohol it had produced, and the Colonel and the Doctor went into business together, selling it as fuel, and that's why Iowa's economy is collapsing.
No, it isn't. That's dumb.
Quite.